Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, this week we're remembering Muhammad Ali ahead of the celebration of his life on Friday. Today, his conversion to Islam. Born Cassius Clay, he decided to throw off his grandfather's slave name in 1964 after meeting Malcolm X. That powered much of his life to come. Zahir Ali is a researcher and lecturer in American history focusing on Islam and Black America. Zahir, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, and others have noted how extraordinary this was, that this was the first African-American to achieve global celebrity through the Olympic gold medal in 1960, the Sonny Liston World Championship boxing win in 64. And then to take that celebrity and turn it into this religious activism. Just remind us, how stunning was this in 64?
Well, it was quite stunning for several reasons. The primary one being that Cassius Clay at the time, when he embraced the Nation of Islam, it was not, you know, by any means a popular faith, certainly in the United States. It had a stigma attached to it because of the Black nationalist politics that the community practiced. And so this was not a popular move as far as broader America was concerned.
Yes, Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam were viewed as militants, as vocal separatists, as sort of the other end of the spectrum from Martin Luther King, which, of course, you know, history has softened that view. They were born of a vicious, segregated America. But it wasn't the broader Islam world.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. This was a very unique expression of Islam that emerged in the United States out of, you know, a very racist context. And so the kind of Islam that was practiced by the Nation of Islam spoke directly to the conditions of African Americans. That said, when Elijah Muhammad gave Cassius Clay his name, Muhammad Ali, that was a kind of global passport. And so it wasn't that he had achieved global celebrity and then he became, you know, joined the Nation of Islam and this somehow threatened to undermine his global celebrity. It actually enhanced his global celebrity because people around the world, especially in Asia and Africa and the Caribbean who are Muslim, they didn't really know or care about the theological nuances mm-hmm. between the Nation of Islam and other traditions of Islam. They just heard that there was a man named Muhammad Ali, the two most popular names in the Muslim world, who was the heavyweight champion. And so this kind of gave him a kind of passport to and people were like, oh, we have a Muslim heavyweight champion. And that was that enhanced his global celebrity.
Well, and it's interesting because he was also scorned for not using his name. Wesley Morris in The New York Times had a great line this week, and he wrote, Ali was scorned, but then later in 1974, I think, when Roots came out, and the main figure there, Kunta Kinte, was whipped for not using his slave name, a lot of America went, oh, I get it now. I get what Muhammad Ali was doing. But talk about how he left the Nation of Islam. He joined the broader Islamic community. To what effect?
If his joining the Nation of Islam in 1964 enhanced his global appeal, then his kind of joining the kind of global Muslim tradition did even more so. It enhanced his global appeal. It enhanced his appeal, of course, in the United States because now he had kind of moved away from what people had considered was a separatist vision. And so this only increased his appeal. Yeah.
And we can't forget in 1966, Muhammad Ali cited his Muslim faith in applying for conscientious objector status during the Vietnam War. He took the case all the way to the Supreme Court and won. Some say it made him the most prominent person in the world to have taken on the U.S. government and won. He lost years of his life.
Yeah, so I think Muhammad Ali's actions in the 1960s really require close attention because these are the actions that I think has made him the hero that he is for many people. Standing up against the Vietnam War, risking and in fact losing his right to fight because of his opposition to the war, his conscientious objection. And so I think it's important for us to think about what shaped his ideas in the 1960s and his emergence as an icon of Black power. I mean, here was a Black man saying, I am Black and I am the greatest mm-hmm. at a time when African Americans were recovering from, you know, the kind of stereotyping that denigrated them throughout the media.
So Zahir Ali, you are 43 now. You've told us that even though you share the last name, of course, you're not related. But when you were little, you'd be asked if you were. And what would you say?
I would smile a wide smile and say yes. And, you know, it's funny, even more recently, I live in New York, and I was at an event with all of these, like, New York literati, and this older woman came up to me after I gave a presentation, and she said, you know, are you related to Muhammad Ali? And I was so shocked by that question. I hadn't been asked that in years. But I looked at her and I saw that she was from a different generation and from a different community. And I just smiled and said, in faith, in faith.
And what does that mean to you, just, you know, as a young kid coming up, that there was this almost Superman that looked like you, that, you know, had the same faith? What did that mean?
Oh, it was so affirming to see that there was somebody that reflected me in that way, and in such a way, to know that there was a champion, a sports hero, and as I got older, a strong political figure that I could connect with.
That's Zahir Ali, researcher, lecturer in American history with a focus on Islam and Black America. He's also oral historian at the Brooklyn Historical Society. Zahir, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.